Well, hello everybody. It is Eddie, and I'm filling in for Mr. Shortell today. He is actually flying over here to Texas, and here we're now going to lock ourselves up in a room tomorrow and work on some new developments in the 50-50 model. So, got a lot going on there. So I'm covering today, and as they cover for me sometimes Mondays and Tuesdays. Got Matt here helping me.
Hello.
So, we got a lot of content today, don't we?
We've got a couple of questions, so and then we have some opportunities for open mic. So
All right, cool.
yeah, so the best thing, just like with Kevin, if you've got a question or have an issue, you can always just raise your hand and then we'll bring you in once we go into the open mic session. So
All right, very good. All right, what are we going to start with, Matthew?
Did you want to just highlight real quick the Wall Street Journal?
Yeah, I know most of you probably heard this, so we don't want to belabor it, but Wall Street Journal's online version, which is called MarketWatch, did an article about us, released on Monday, and gotten a lot of press about this. It's been reworked for Housing Wire. I just saw an email from Loan MLS, and it had it on there. I think there's probably I'm kind of surprised at all the people that have caught it already and then sending it back out. So I think the important thing there is just credibility and the market, that it is a market of small investors. I know there's these whack jobs that get down the bottom in the blog and type that stuff. It's all noise, and I think anybody's got a brain in their head can decipher that. So I wouldn't be scared to send somebody to see the report just because, some guy at the bottom that's homeless watching Jerry Springer has, clever, smart ass comments to make. So.
I'm trying to figure out how he's going to watch a TV when he's home.
I mean, I, you know me, you know where you stand with me, and I mean, like you can't fix stupid. Those guys are stupid. You can't fix it.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's noise.
Yeah, Emily talked me down from the reading them, so she's like,
Oh, I know. We just had our sales meeting, and Dwayne and Kevin Moore and all of them are like, man, that's just all I can do to hold myself back from. I'm like, don't. And they get it. It's just like. It's like the article is very favorable. So, who you think is going to sit there and read all the? Let me ask you something, Matt. If you were reading an interesting article about something, a hobby or something that you're interested in, would you go read all that blog stuff at the bottom and start out a bunch of nutbag stuff?
no, it wouldn't. It
Nobody
wouldn't.
would.
It
Yeah,
might be profound.
it's noise. It's the, once again, you can't fix stupid.
Yeah.
So, that's what I got to say about that.
Well, I am going to go ahead and roll down to our first question. And just to let everybody know, if you have not received that link, I do have it on the boards there, so you can pull it from the board if you wanted to check it out if you hadn't so far. So let's see if all right, Mr. Michael, you are unmuted. Go ahead.
Hey. How's it going again?
It's good, Michael. What's up, buddy?
Hey, I just had a question. I just got my taxes back from my CPA, and I told him about my note business, and he was asking me, like, well, why don't you ask some of your note guys how you treat that transaction? Because I did wholesales and I did flips, and the wholesales that were just paper sales, I just signed a contract and then sold the contract, really wasn't a capital gains. It was classified as other income.
Well,
And I
yeah,
know
you're
when
a
I flip a
dealer.
house,
Yeah, I knew when you typed that in, Michael, that I mean, none of us are probably taking capital gains on real estate that on fix and flip because you have to hold it. And then you have to be not considered a dealer.
Well, that's right. With my flips, my accountants have always counted it as a capital gain, taxed at a capital gains
Now,
rate.
well, I'm not saying they hadn't done it, but if you get audited, that ain't going to work, cause it ain't no capital gains. I'm not an accountant. I'm not a CPA, and I don't play one on TV. But I'm just telling you right now that I've done lots of fix and flips. I've had lots of property, And I can tell you right now that under the definition of capital gains, I do not believe a flip is going to fit.
Okay. Well, so what about...
It's ordinary income.
Okay. What's the notes is the same then?
Well, it's a long, deep subject, Michael.
Oh, okay.
So let me tell you the short answer, okay? There are different ways that you can, I don't like to use the word manipulate, but there are different ways that you can position your income with notes. It is a taxable event. You're making income. It's not, you know, owning rental property has tax advantages. The problem with rental property is it's only deferring your taxes. It's not making them go away. You understand that, right?
Yes, yes, sir.
So if you take depreciation, you got to go reclaim it another day. Let me ask you a question. What's the tax rate going to be over the next 10 years? Going to go up or down?
It's going to go up.
Well, if it does, then maybe deferring taxes isn't the best thing. I'm just saying.
Point taken.
And I'm going to tell you that I hate rentals, and everybody that's ever trained with Eddie knows that. But the truth of the matter is, Martha's got some rentals.
Yeah, I've got 11. I'm trying to get out of.
I don't want to fix all your headaches. I want to make sure that you keep focusing on notes, so that you know that those people who drive you crazy enough that you'll do something about it.
Yeah.
All right, so let me be clear about this. All right. I am working at a specialist CPA relationship to work with students on notes. Okay. We have a capital fund. We have multiple entities that are done at about three different accounting shops. Okay. My mother-in-law's, my personal deals, and our capital fund. Okay.
Yeah.
Cumulatively about 2,000 assets, okay? I can tell you that the accounting piece is always a fight, whether you got rent properties or you got whatever. I'm working with a firm that would be a specialist firm that understands some of the unique scenarios with accounting, okay? Mm-hmm. So the short answer is right now, you know, that if you're doing fix and flips, a true fix and flip, meaning that you buy a property and sell it right immediately, right?
Well, I flip it. I mean, I fix it up, then I flip it. So I'll own it, and always less than 12 months. And
then yeah, it's not a capital gains.
Well, short term. Okay, so it was taxed at 15%. He may not have called it a capital gains. Put it on the Schedule C. Schedule E is my rental business. Schedule C, which is really the capital gains.
How many deals you do a year?
Well, last year I only did two. The year before I did four. But
okay,
this
well
year
then
I don't plan to do
it. You understand you're not considered a dealer, right?
Well, good. No, I didn't think so.
Not okay, non-dealer status has a different treatment in fix and flip or notes than dealer status has.
Right. Okay.
Okay. So this is a deep wrap around the axle subject. I'm working at something that we're going to talk about at Summer Summit in this regard. Okay?
Okay.
But the truth of the matter is your note space is probably not going to be any different than your real estate space in this regard.
Okay. So just track the cost for now and the profits, and then in the Summer Summit, which of course I'll be at, we'll get more information on how to classify that for next year's taxes.
Listen. You know there's two professional people with professional license that I like to complain about, right?
Attorneys.
None I like to dog more than attorneys. Okay? And they deserve every bit of it.
Yeah, I do agree.
The second is accountants. I tell you, they all pass the same test, but they don't all have the same competency.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to work with an accounting firm that has special research and special knowledge related to the unique characteristics of our business. I've got some bigger firms that do that for like our capital fund, but they're going to charge too much money for what you guys do. We pay a lot of, I mean, you know, we just had an audit in our capital fund.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some things that we want to help you guys with it. You know, we think overall it's probably going to be better than that, than doing that instead of you're trying to retrain all of your CPAs out there with no special knowledge about our business.
CPA was, it's a new CPA this year, and he was a little bit confused on how to handle the wholesales because I was just selling paper. I just sold the contract, so I never owned the asset. And so
I don't know how I can treat that anyway other than ordinary income. He does.
That's what I told him. I said, just make it ordinary income, not subject to self-employment tax. And he said, well, that's – so I don't know what that ordinary income, what it means. I mean, what kind of tax rate is that? I guess just whatever, depending on how much income I had.
How do you not pay self-employment tax on that?
What's that?
How do you not pay self-employment tax on that?
On ordinary income? I was just told that you don't pay ordinary, you don't pay self-employment tax on ordinary income, or maybe it was other income. See, I'm confused.
I don't want to get too wrapped around the axle here on that, but you know, today is such a good week to talk about IRS anyway.
Yeah, I know. That's kind of why I thought about it last night and I sent it out. But we got plenty of time. I don't need to resolve it, obviously, even before June, just before next year. So I want to be able to run my finances.
Listen, accounting overall with real estate investors and note guys, it is a common subject and it is a common industry issue. And we're always looking for the better CPA.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. More to come on that. Promise you.
Good.
I'm working at it. I get your issue.
I'm good.
All right, Mr. Thanks. Matt, what else?
I was just I was talking all along, and I realized I was muted. I said there's a couple things on the board, so if you wanted to check those out, and then I'm gonna...
Yeah, Bill, I hear what you're saying. Once again, I was making the presumption that he was a dealer. And if you're a dealer, that's going the capital gains is a different animal. So that's kind of why I was saying that. But anyway, I don't want to get too wrapped around the axle in accounting stuff today. It's a good subject. I don't mean that it's not. We've been trying to work at a solution there, and I'm fairly close to thinking I have something resolved. So hopefully, maybe, not promising, but maybe it's summer, and I'm got these guys ready, squared away. We're supposed to have a call with them next week. We've had numerous calls with them in the past. All right, Matt, what's up?
Well, before we head on, and I know Brian said he's he's not going to be able to get on until around 4:30. So I kind of wanted to make a couple announcements. I know that everybody should have received it. Our list went out. So everyone should be able to see the new list that just went up. I believe it went out yesterday. So if, you know, go on there, and there's a whole list of new assets on there available for everybody. And the other thing is that if you are going to purchase an asset and you fill out the purchase sale agreement, make sure you go ahead and download the due diligence file that is in the links that are on Dropbox. As Charles said last night, those due diligence files are electronic and held on our server, so we don't send those out with the collateral file. So the best thing to do to keep it so that you're not having to come back and try to get them, because the links will go inactive after a certain period of time once we sell the assets. They need to copy. You need to copy them down and put them in your files and put them in with your others once they come in. So I'm going.
All right.
I'll see. And yeah, Brian has not made it on. He said he did tell me he wouldn't be able to be on until 5:30. So Joseph's asking a question about the CPA firm.
I'll get into that later. I'm gonna see Joe here this weekend. We'll talk about it.
Okay. So guys,
I know when I get you guys started on certain topics, it's like whoa. So it's a fair question, and we'll talk about it.
So if you have any, we have some open mic time. So if you have any questions or comments or anything you need to go over, please raise your hand or type it into the board, and then we can get you going.
Didn't we have a brokering question?
That's what I was at. I sent that in, and I didn't see a brokering question, but
is Roman on? Hey, I thought Roman had a question about brokering that we were going to cover today.
No, Roman is not on. So,
all right, well, missed opportunity there.
I'll I didn't do that. So,
raise your hand, Kevin Moore.
He's unmuted.
How do I raise my hand?
I think you just did.
All right.
So, Kevin, there's a couple of things that have been coming up. You know, we got our titanium mastermind that's starting here in a day or so.
Correct.
And so we've been doing a good bit of preparation for that, and we've got some people coming in, and just kind of otherwise, you know, overall, without getting into any specifics, I wanted you to talk about a business trend of business lines of credit.
Okay.
What have you learned about that?
So what I've learned over the course of the past 9 months that I've been working on this, that there is some business lines of credit available if you know how to make yourself attractive to the bank. So basically, you have to know how to leverage your, they call it a lendability or a fundability score. It has to do partly with your traditional credit score, but then also it's what the banks are looking for. So right now there are some bigger banks that are doing some unsecured lines of credit, and very, very attractive terms, very attractive rates. So that's something that I have been working on and under your guidance for the past 9 months, and we're getting to a point where I would say within the next 90 to 120 days we'll be able to spend more time on that topic, because I know everybody on this call and basically every mentoring member needs additional capital. I mean, it's just anybody that's running a successful business, you always need access to good capital. And so the line of credit is coming back into the marketplace. You just have to know how to get yourself positioned correctly for it.
So sounds like coming to Summer Summit might turn out to be a smart idea.
Well, I would think that that's going to be something that we're going to dedicate quite a bit of time to at Summer Summit, because if you want to know how to get 35,000, 50,000, 75,000, 100,000, 150,000 in additional lines of credit, we're going to cover that at Summit.
So I just wanted to kind of introduce you to some things that we've been working on behind the scenes. We do have a group that the Titanium Mastermind is going to meet this weekend. We're going to work on some guinea pigs, so that by the time we get to Summer Summit, we're going to be able to talk about it more specifically. So, It's a great trend, and what's interesting is Kevin, one of the reasons that we've seen the banks do this is because they've cut back on mortgage lending.
Yes, the banks are looking for more ways to make money, and what they're looking for is people with good cash flow, good credit, and the regulators are whacking the fee income that the banks can make, so they're going back to lending. And it's the line of credit is a more profitable model for them than the credit cards, and it's also more consumer friendly in that if you get a line of credit, it's not like, you know, you got to keep going out and paying over and over and over for the credit card. So it's a good trend. We're always forward looking. So this is something that, you know, this is a ripple in the pond. I'm not going to call it a big wave, but it's a ripple. It's out there and it's picking up momentum, and we're on top of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you and I have been working on this project for months.
Yes, we have.
We've vetted a couple of companies and they didn't check out. And then we have done a lot of vetting to the company we're currently using, which all seems to check out.
Right. And we also wanted to stay away from the traditional credit card model where you go out and you try to get yourself loaded up with a bunch of credit cards, because that basically can impact your credit for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years out, where you basically become, you can't get anything. Your credit score gets below 700 and your debt ratios are off. It just ends up being a mess. So that was one of the things you told me when I started this project, was get the best product available out there and make sure it's not like what everybody else is doing.
Yeah, one thing that has been fairly common is there's companies that will help you get unsecured lines of credit personally, and they do it really with a credit card.
Yes.
And the first thing is if you dare draw over 50% of the line of credit, you know it's going to sink your credit score, and the line of credit's about 25 grand, so you got 12,000 apiece. Well, if you don't get several of them, you're not going to make it work. So
right.
Basically, what we saw other people doing out there is you get you a line of credit with credit cards, and all of a sudden sink your credit score by 100 points.
Yes, in really looking at that model, what it was is you'd get guys, Eddie, you're exactly right. They would get you credit cards. They would charge you anywhere from 5 to 10% of whatever they got you in terms of money. They would take that up front, and then once you use your credit card, because they tell you, go ahead and charge them up, it was not unusual to see 7,500, 120, 150 points where people were previously might have had like a 750 and their credit score went to 600 or lower. And that'll take you a couple of years to crawl out of. Bad stuff.
Yeah. Well, and once again, and somebody made a comment about this, it's also the cost of money. You know, credit cards are typically going to be a higher cost of money. And when you start paying, I mean, one of the big things that we wrote off on the table is it can't be high double-digit rates. I mean, it's got to be single-digit money.
Absolutely. And, you know, the other thing is it can't be teaser money, which with the credit cards, a lot of the guys will tell you, hey, we'll get you 0% credit cards. Well, what's the problem with that? You charge up 35, 40, 50 grand on that charge card, and as soon as that 0% goes off, you are now in double-digit interest, and you got problems.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I was just looking at some of the comments. I mean, you know, and once again, people have some working lines of credit. You know, like we've got a student on here that's got a property pledged, and he's got a line of credit against it. So he has equity. He's gotten a loan. And he just can draw it down when he needs the money, which a lot of students will do that. These lines of credit that Kevin Moore and I are talking about are unsecured lines of credit. They're not secured lines of credit. There's a lot of nuances. We'll talk more specifically about it Summer Summit. If you're with us this weekend, we're going to talk a good bit about it at the Titanium. But you know, there's a lot of nuances that we understood by the time we started talking about talking to people who helped us. We knew it couldn't be this. It had to be a certain way. You know, we can go get you a crowdfunding line of credit, right, Kevin?
Yep. Yes.
What's the issue with that?
The issue on the crowdfunding line of credit is the monthly payment will choke you, and in most cases it's double digit. And to your point about,
well, I mean, no, there's affordable lines of credit that are like 6 or 7% interest. But the problem is they do a 12-month amortizing loan. So you borrow $250,000, and your payment's only $30,000 a month.
Yep. Six months ago, I thought I had this problem solved, and it was basically 5.9. It was the money was 5.99 to 7.99, and the application, the process, it was easy. It took 2 hours. Problem was when they sent it back down the term sheet, it was a 1-year deal, and they wouldn't run it as a true revolving line. Yeah. So
you had to take the money off at one time. Had to take it and had to pay it back when they wanted on a monthly basis. So anyway, we've been working on this. I just wanted to kind of open up the ideas today because I don't think we've mentioned it a little bit, but we've been a little bit elusive about it because it's. I'll be honest with you, it's been harder to work through the issues than we would have thought because we have vetted a lot of people that are, quote, out there doing this, business lines of credit, most of which when we really dug in, it had these flaws that we've discussed.
Right.
So it's important that we, you know, try to kind of dig through the issues. So anyway, I just thought that'd be good. To kind of introduce to you guys today because, you know, I realize that a lot of people, you know, would do a line of credit. My father-in-law built most of his business on lines of credit. You know, he would borrow money at commercial banks and buy notes. And of course, he's passed away 18 years ago and we've still, you know, continued to run that type of a business. And, you know, we've borrowed, the family has borrowed tens of millions of dollars to buy notes over the years. And there's, you know, once again, when the banks were doing so heavily in subprime lending and stuff like that, they really weren't doing this kind of stuff very much, but now they have heavy cash. They have low loan demand. They need to get their money out. And we saw this trend really starting about 2 years ago. And the banks are just like everybody else. They're sitting on dry cash. They need to make a loan.
They need to get money out to people with good credit scores and good cash flow. That's what they're looking for.
All right, so more to come on this. Kevin, that's just a project he's been helping us with, and thought we would get him to kind of give us an update. And there's more to come on this, probably before Summer Summit, but certainly at Summer Summit, right?
That is correct.
Okay, cool. Okay, Matt.
So. Ken has a question, and the question is, and this may be something Charles needs to answer, but and by the way, Charles did sneak on if we needed to use him. He may be mad at me because I pointed that out now. He's asking that if a note owner prior to Colonial started the foreclosure process by filing with the court and someone buys that note, are they grandfathered in on that foreclosure, or do they need to start the foreclosure process over?
Well, I certainly feel like I can answer that question, but I hate to take a question away from Mr. Mangan because I consider him on all these topics to really be the expert.
Good afternoon, everybody. Did I raise my hand?
Apparently you raised your hand, Charles.
You were doing a fine job, Eddie. I was just listening and working here. So.
Yeah. No, it's an assignment of the foreclosure process.
Right. So foreclosures can be assigned. So typically when we acquire a group of assets, if they're in foreclosure, typically what we do is have the servicing company assign those that foreclosure over to our servicer. So we just pick up where the last servicer left off. there's really no skip. We don't skip a beat. They transfer it. At the end of that transfer period, they notify the attorney, and the attorney continues to process the foreclosure. So the one thing you want to make sure of, though, that when you're buying a note, I mean, if you're buying a note, it's transferring from one servicer to the other. You want to make sure that other servicer closes and bills. And so you're not, because a lot of times what could happen is a servicer may send you an invoice for attorney fees, and then the new servicer will send you the same invoice for the attorney fees. So, I mean, you want to close it out with one servicer and make sure it's transferred over to the servicer, the new servicer with the same attorney.
So let me give you guys kind of a layman's example of what he meant by close and bill. Let's pretend that Charles owns a house that he's rehabbing. Okay, and he's got the painters working, and he's got the electricians, and he's got whatever. And I buy the house from him in its current condition, meaning including the work that is now being done. I say, Charles, when I buy this house from you, you got to make sure that you pay the contractor for whatever they've done to date. I may continue to use them, but I'm not going to go pay them for back rehab work that you've already done. Charles goes, okay, I got it. Okay. So if I buy that house, I got to make sure that I'm clear that Charles has paid the contractors for the work they've done up to date. Now, he used an industry term, close and bill. So if the attorney has done work in January, February, and March, he needs to bill the old lien holder if I buy it on April 1st. That's April Fool's Day, isn't it?
It is.
So that's what close and bill means, and that's as simple as it gets. If you're buying an asset and you want to, you do it. Now, there are some states, Charles, and I think Ohio is one. There are some states that will not allow you to do an assignment of the foreclosure process. Is that true?
Eddie, I'd have to confirm that. And the reason I've transferred some, and I know I've had some transfer in Ohio, and I think that's applying, Eddie, from what it, if you're transferring it from, say you're transferring it from that servicer's attorney to your servicer.
But as long as you keep the attorney, in most cases that will work. Is that
right?
A fair statement?
Right. And that's what we typically do, is we keep the same attorney if they've already got that foreclosure in process. We always keep the same attorney. We don't use another attorney.
Yeah.
It just keeps it simple, because some attorneys won't even pick up a foreclosure. Even if you're having them assign it, there are attorneys that will say no, because they want it from the very beginning. They're looking at collecting all the fees. And there are attorneys that I have had pushback saying, no, just use the attorney that's already handling it. So we've done that.
Yeah. All right, very good.
All right, I'm going to let you go back to it, Eddie.
All right, Charles, thanks. Yeah, so Steven said he just bought one Ohio and he did an assumption of the attorney. A foreclosure process, rather. Same attorney.
Yeah.
All right, cool. All right, so Matt, is Brian on?
Not yet, so we're right at it. So, but he, there is a question that Michael had in reference to the previous question when you were talking about, or what you and Kevin were talking about. And he said he has a pledged asset line from Schwab's bank. Interest rate is 3.98. Is this an example of what you were just talking about?
Yeah, and that's what I mentioned when we were talking about it. Some people have an asset they already own, they have equity in, and they've just gotten a line of credit at the bank so they can draw down on it when they need it. Now, what Kevin and I were talking about is an unsecured line of credit. So there's not a property pledged for collateral. So there's a secured line of credit and there's an unsecured line of credit. Yeah. So, okay. Trying to make sure we cover. Go ahead.
Look at 320 Crystal. Is that a more performing, or can this also be a non-performing question?
Yeah, Crystal's question is a Monday night question.
Okay.
The direct mail program relates to buying performing seller finance notes. It's a great question. Love to talk about it. Just got to get it formatted. I know we got, you know, when people are kind of new to the mentorship, they'll sometimes ask us stuff that's good questions, just the wrong day. And so a little bit of an adjustment to kind of learn, you know, when we like to cover different things. So
Crystal, if you'll send that in to me, I'll make sure to get that on the performing loan content,
yeah,
either for Thursday or Monday. So
yeah, just content@noteschool.com, and that's what goes to the Chris. There's several of us that get that email. Really, about 10 of us that get that email. So when you go to content, that's why you frequently will see there's a lot of different people answering on there. But it's so content is really stuff that needs to go on the webinar. Sometimes we'll pull something offline if it's unique or whatever. It's different than help desk. It's different from trade desk. If you're looking at buying an asset, and there's on the membership site, there's some pretty clear definitions about what your topic is and where that really should go. Okay. Some people like Matt are on like almost all of those emails, Matt.
Yeah, it can get fun. All right. Yeah. Kathy has her hand raised. So,
okay.
All right. Kathy, go ahead.
Hi. How are you doing, Eddie?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Well, last week I had called in and, I didn't call in, but I sent in the information about a note I had in Michigan, and the attorney had written up a quitclaim deed for me on a land contract that I was trying to get the borrowers to sign, and that turned out not to be successful. But anyhow, you had said, why did I not get a warranty deed? So I asked the attorney, why did I not get a warranty deed instead of a quitclaim deed? And he said that the reason was that the borrower, because it is a land contract, are not in fee simple ownership, and therefore they were not qualified to give me a warranty deed. All they could give me was a quitclaim deed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I understand that, Kathy. I absolutely do. But my point was that why would they do something that was a deed without any form of warranty? And yeah, a quitclaim deed is a deed without warranty. It's a philosophical argument. I get what the attorney's saying. And as typical, when the attorney answers you, you know, it's like he's not going to go, I've never thought about that. Should I put some kind of warranty area in the quitclaim deed that they're quitting any claim in a property they don't have title to, but they should have some evidence of warranting that they are conveying any interest in warranting any interest they have? You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
So it's I knew when I hung up and we talked about that, I knew what the attorney was going to say when you said it.
Oh, okay.
I never hear an attorney go, wow, I never thought of that. That's a great idea.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to, you know, get back with you and let you know that
I know what a quit claim deed is, and I know that I can quit claim the Golden Gate Bridge to you.
Yes, okay? I know.
And I don't own the Golden Gate Bridge. I'm just quitting any claim that I have in it. And that's the idea and the concept of a quitclaim deed and a land contract. They're not saying that they have title. They're just quitting any claim that they have to title.
Well, and that's how I got it from Colonial, was a quitclaim deed.
Yeah.
So, anyway. Also, just for your information, something else I had sent in just as an FYI, but the land contract had it specifically written in that you could do an eviction I can't remember the exact terminology, but it was written into the land contract that you could do an eviction without having to go through the forfeiture or foreclosure or whatever. So when I wasn't successful getting the borrower to sign the quitclaim deed, then the attorney said, okay, well, we got to do something else. So I said, why can we not just evict them based on this language in the contract? And his response was that that was no longer legal in Michigan. They had changed the law, and I think he called it a common law eviction, and that was no longer legal in Michigan, even though that was the language in the contract. And so we would have to go through a forfeiture or a foreclosure procedure in order to get them out of there. So just for your information.
All right. So, Kathy, I can write in there that if they don't pay, that I can go take the front door off. And they can sign it.
Right.
Okay. That doesn't mean it's enforceable. That just means that both parties signed it.
Okay.
Okay. What he's talking about is a revision in the law that relates to what we refer to as a court of equity.
Okay.
And we referred to that last week, talking about if they pay for so long.
Right.
Or if they have such a percentage of equity in the property.
And, yes.
And that if they meet that threshold, then they have a quote equitable interest in the property.
Yes.
And then you get into the theory of the law of a court of equity.
Okay.
Okay. So let me just tell you this, Kathy. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask me going forward, when you guys are buying a defaulted land contract, or you get a land contract that's in default, okay, mm-hmm. there's some specialty vendors that have specialty attorneys that have good experience in this area. Probably none better than NAA, because they've done 20,000 of them.
Okay.
Okay. So you may waddle around and get what you want done with this attorney, and it sounds like you're going to get it done, okay? But there are attorneys that know how to get things done with experience. I'm not saying that this guy you're using is an attorney and he didn't pass the bar for the state of Michigan or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying to you, and I understand every answer he's given you. Okay, I totally understand every answer. Okay, you can bill some reps and warranties within a quit claim. You
okay.
can quit a claim to a property, but still rep and warranty some representations. Okay.
Okay.
I know you can do it because I've done it. Okay.
Okay.
So I get the fact that he's like, whew, that lady's asking me a crazy question. She wants to know why she didn't, you know. So I totally understand that, and I totally understand that just because you write it in a contract doesn't mean it's enforceable. Okay?
Okay.
I can write in the contract certain things and say the interest rate's going to be this, right? And the law says, well, you can't charge that much interest. In fact, if you charge that much interest, it makes the loan usurious.
Yeah.
Okay. So I understand that, and they may have paid to a point where it's court of equity. I don't know. How long have they been paying on this deal?
Oh, no, they only made 3 payments.
Is it a recorded land contract?
Yes.
It is recorded.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And they only made 3 payments.
Welcome to the note business, Kathy.
And they threatened the process server who went over there to try to get them to sign the quitclaim deed to give it up, and they threatened him.
Kathy, I'm going to remind you of something. Okay, you remember the first class or two you came to, and you were just kind of sitting there in shell shock, and you asked me like 7 million questions?
Mm-hmm.
You remember that?
Yes.
I hadn't forgotten it. You know what I told you, Kathy? You said, Eddie, will this business work? And I said, yes. You said, is it profitable? I said, yes. She said, you said, what do I need to do? I said, develop a tolerance for the business.
And I have.
And so I'm saying to you that, like Mangan and I, you've been on these calls for years, Kathy, and
yep.
you've seen people freak out because the realtor goes over there and takes a bunch of pictures of somebody pooping in the toilet of a vacant house and leave all the youngins' clothes in the bedroom and the couch still in the living room, and they act like, oh my God, I can't believe that. And you've heard Charles and I go, we ain't never seen a foreclosure they didn't leave all the stuff in the house.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So all of this stuff is just a process. When you tell me that, okay, you got an early default in a deal. So you owner financed a house and they didn't pay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Did you vet them? Did you vet the person that owed you the money?
Oh, I bought the land contract from y'all. I didn't owner finance.
Okay. So did we vet them?
You bought it from somebody else.
Okay, well, I'm not saying that's impossible, but I don't know that we're reselling land contracts with only three payments made. I don't know the circumstance. I know that's outside of the norm of what we do. I don't know the circumstances, so, you know.
That's what it is.
Okay, there has only been three payments made since the inception of the agreement.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I will assure you there's certain other variables about this deal, okay? Because when we're selling land contracts to somebody that, you know, they normally have a lot of seasoning.
No.
Did I say normally?
Yep.
Okay. I'm going to stand on that statement. So there's other circumstances or characteristics around this deal that I don't know about, okay?
Okay.
I'm going to tell you this, that with that seasoning, there's no court of equity.
No, I know that.
Okay, so it's probably a termination process.
Yeah, he said it was a forfeiture.
Okay, that's not a foreclosure.
No, 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 we're not doing a foreclosure.
So it's not going to take you long to get it back.
He said that... we have to wait 90 days after we get the judgment from court, and I'm not really sure how long it's going to take to get through the court process.
Yeah. All right. So once again, I want you guys to be good about bringing your issues with attorneys to these non-performing calls, because I'm telling you right now that this is a big area that I see that can really facilitate how you do it.
Okay.
Kathy, I just want to clarify this, okay? When we do an offering, loans, like we'll sometimes sell a loan and we'll call it sub-performing, okay?
Uh-huh.
Listen to me. I'm not talking about your deal. I'm talking about generally speaking. Okay, we'll call it sub-performing, and we had a deal the other day on the performing deal, and they owed $1,000 worth of taxes, okay? And we're saying it's a paying note, and they're paying, not perfect, but they're paying and probably will continue to pay, but they owe $1,000 in taxes. And the guy goes, well, that's a performing note, and we're like, yeah, but we saw it off the price where you're buying it as between a kind of a non-performing price and a performing price. Oh. You see what I'm saying? So when I say there's other circumstances related to a deal, a lot of times it happens to be price.
Okay.
So I just want to clarify that you know, I see there's some other folks here I see on the call that, you know, it's like we buy these things, and when we buy them from other people, we try to price them accordingly. We'll buy a grab bag of stuff, and somebody will have loans that are paying perfect. Some people have loans that are kind of in the danger zone, and some people have loans that absolutely have all defaulted. You know what I'm saying? So you kind of got non-performing, you got sub-performing, and you got performing. And when you buy a loan and it's, you know, it's less than a perfect status, you know, then, you know, that's what you get. You know, and we can say most of the time it works, but you'll be the one to attest and say it doesn't. Let me make one statement to you about your customer kind of fussing at the process server. You know what I see in that?
What?
Emotional equity.
No, they don't have any emotional equity, and it didn't bother me that he hollered at the guy. I mean, I didn't find that. I was just glad.
Why do you say they
did.
Don't have any emotional equity?
Because they're only there because they don't have enough money to move anywhere else, and they've been living there for free for 2 years.
What's the house rent for?
About $600.
Okay.
And their payment is $321.
Okay. Well, it sounds like the upside's good, isn't it?
Well, I mean, they haven't made any payments, and so
no,
I
mean, your upside.
Oh, yeah, if I can just get him out of there.
Okay.
Yep. No, I'm not worried that he yelled at the guy. In fact, I was thrilled that he yelled at the guy because I couldn't figure out if there was anybody there or not. So at least now I know there's somebody there.
That's funny. All right. Appreciate the update.
Okay.
All right, Brian has made it on now, so I'll go ahead and pull him in, unless you have something on the board you want to discuss before that.
No, go ahead.
Okay. Brian, you have yourself muted. There should have been an audio pin that was sent to you, or that you should have. And that way you can go ahead and talk. There you go. You're good. Brian, you're good to go. Brian? All right, well, I'm going to go ahead and we can kind of hear you in the background, so I don't know if you're just somewhere you can't talk. So I'm going to go ahead and read through the question real quick and then get you started, and then hopefully you'll be able to come in. So he's joined a couple of weeks ago with Note School, and he has someone that lives in Tennessee who wants to buy real estate. And they've been looking for non-performing notes in Tennessee so they can either get a deed in lieu and sell them the foreclosure or foreclose and get the property outright for them. He was wondering what his best steps would be in terms of getting a deal done with this individual. So let's say they can't get any assets from us that are in Tennessee, which he's been talking to the trade desk. What would be his best option for finding assets to potentially sell to this rehabber, which they have vetted and is ready to cut a check whenever they find the assets that fit his criteria? He is willing to pay the foreclosure cost, and if he can get a good enough deal on the property. So he was looking for just a wholesale to get some money to come in the short term while he continues the training. So he's just trying to figure out how should he approach, or how should he handle this investor who's needing.
Well, I'm a little bit scared of this guy that he's talking about. Okay? Because it's kind of like what the article was alluding to that wrote about us in the Wall Street Journal. Okay, what the regulatory agencies are worried about is some guy that's really just trying to go get the property, and he's not really a professional note guy, and he doesn't know what the process is. Okay, and so it's kind of a political hot potato for me. I would tell you that if you're trying to go buy inventory in a market, probably the best way to do it is to go reverse engineer it and look at notices of default. Now, Bank of America or Fannie Mae is not going to sell you a defaulted loan. You can forget that. But that doesn't mean that there's not some hard money lender or some individual that's filed a notice of default and they wouldn't turn around and sell you the note. And that's probably how I would go about it. But I'm telling you right now, that some rehabber that just because he's bought rehab houses and he doesn't have a servicer. He's not really set up to service notes. He doesn't legally know what he can and can't do. I'm just telling you right now, I ain't real big on, you know, going, you know, feeding the lion some protein right before they turn him out of the cage on me. So that's I don't really exploit that as being something I want you guys to go do. I think it's pretty common. I've got another student that had a similar question that sent us something earlier today. I got this guy and he's a rehabber and he's done this and done that and whatever. And I rehabbers that have done a lot of business, it's kind of like they get their confidence up. You know what I'm saying? They've done it, and they think they kind of bulletproof. They deal with all these issues like you hear us talking about. Well, the house needs fixing, or the attorney. You get to where you just kind of get in the problem-solving mode. But there's certain definite unique knowledge related to owning a note. And, you know, this guy's not really considered all that. I'm sure he thinks he's bulletproof, the rehabber guy. I'm certain of that. But he's not bulletproof. And I just, you know, Brian's going, well, I'm just trying to earn a fee and go help him glue something together. And I hear what you're saying. I always question when somebody says I'm ready to pull the trigger and buy, yet they've never pulled the trigger and bought an asset like that, if they're really ready to pull the trigger. So,
well, you know, so
go ahead.
I was just going to say, Tim Akers says he has an REO he can sell him, and he's going to be at the Summer Summit, so that'd be a great time for them to get together and talk about it.
Well, I mean, I think you can. Summer Summit's a little late.
I know, it just makes
him sense. Wants to get rid of it for then.
I was kind of plugging Summer Summit, but yeah, I got you.
Well, what at Note Expo?
Yeah.
I know Tim Akers better than that. You can connect them together. So, Brian, I'm not saying you can't do it. I'm just saying to you that you know, you definitely can target local inventory. There's two ways to do it. Notice of default and assignment of liens. So it can be done. And I've done a lot of note business doing reverse indexing techniques. But once again, you know, the type of defaulted notes we see on our tapes, we're not going to allow you to go take those assets and just go show them to some third-party investor who's not in the note business and, you know, go try to do that. So once again, you got to go find some assets other than that. And then once again, I think it's just a matter of kind of defining how you're going to get paid. You know, in this case, I think if Brian's working for the guy that's buying them, he's got to set up his fee structure with him and make sure that that's set up and up front. The seller of these notes is probably not going to pay a commission to Brian. Just my life experience. So that's kind of, you know, I mean, I'm always happy to take specific examples. I'm always happy to show you guys some creative stuff that I've done. I am leery. I'm going to admit to you, I'm leery of some real estate investor who can't find inventory, and you're going to go flip notes to them, and yet they've never bought notes. I think you got to ask a lot of hard questions, because what I think you could do is jeopardize your reputation by going out and finding notes that you think you've got sold, and the seller of the note is relying on you and your professionalism that's the case. And then you find out on the other end, the guy says, well, I'm ready to really write the check. And what he really meant to say was, I'm really ready to do due diligence. And due diligence means that, well, our attorney says, well, what about this? And, you know, well, and now with CFPB, you need his service and blah, blah. You see what I'm saying? And the guy finds out a whole bunch of things that he wasn't really thinking about. That's That's the reason that I have caution in there. I'm trying to give you specifics. Why don't we do the commercial today, Matthew?
You want to? All right.
Summer Summit.
Got to pull it up, sorry.
Hey guys, it's Eddie. Summer Summit time, June 3rd through the 5th, 2016 is going to be at the American Airlines Training Facility right outside the DFW Airport.
I think there's three dimensions to Summer Summit and the Note School family all getting together. I think there's process, I think there is the emotion of dealing with the business, and I think there's relationship. It can be due diligence, it can be closing, it can be boarding a loan, it can be post-closing, it can be a creative exit strategy. What would the Note School Mega Experience team do? What would they do in this situation? We found that we can really go deep when we get everybody together with a like-minded process and a like-minded background. It's been said that entrepreneurs who can emotionally deal with what goes wrong survive. It's getting up and dusting yourself off and fortifying in your mind that you can do what it takes, even though there's obstacles in the road. Without relationship, I would have never built a note business and done the things that I've done over the past 35 years, and I don't believe you will. Relationship means that you have somebody that's been through similar experiences and been through similar processes. This relationship cannot be replaced on the telephone. This relationship and the life friends that we make in the business is done at live events. You need to connect with people in the business that can inspire you, and those are the things that we are trying to make sure that are happening when we all come together at Summer Summit. All right, so remember, here's the deal. It's June 3rd through the 5th, 2016. Here's how you're going to register. You're going to go to noteschool.com/Summer Summit. Remember, we're having a one-day bonus class taught by Dyke Spotiford. That's going to be on June the 2nd. So there's two registrations. There's one for Summer Summit. Doesn't cost you anything. And then there's the Dyke Spotiford class, $250 for a primary, $200 for a guest, and that includes transportation and a meal at the Fort Worth Stockyards that evening. It'll be a fun time. Dyke Spotiford's a brilliant guy. We'll see you at Summer Summit.
So, Matt, there's a reason that I wanted to do that. And the reason is because one of the focuses that I want to have at Summer Summit this year is the emotional aspect of the business. And what you hear with guys that the attorneys don't say it exactly right, or we got to go back and redo it. And there's no doubt that, what we want to do is to have a focus of, what does it take to go survive as the entrepreneur? And so there's a lot of mechanics that we'll discuss at Summer Summit, just a deeper drill down that we've done consistently. This is our fourth Summer Summit. But there's more than that that we're going to focus on this year. And that is particularly, what does it take to go, dust yourself off when it didn't go in perfectly. Because let me tell you something. Deals don't go perfectly. We are in a business that makes a lot of money. We get paid as an entrepreneur and a deal maker. The Dyke Spotiford class is a pre-class. All the money goes to charity. I think everybody ought to come, seriously. I mean, I cannot think of somebody that would not need something that Dyke Spotiford would be able to cover that day. So I hope that's definitely something that everybody will do, and you guys got to put it on the calendar. First part of June, second is Dyke Spotiford class, June 2nd, third and fourth is Summer Summit, and then we'll be wrapping up a three-day class in another room, so it'll finish up on Friday. So, all right, and oh, by the way, Dyke Spotiford, the money goes to child board. They're taking everybody to the Fort Worth Stockyards. They've got a guy that is considered the best barbecue place in Fort Worth. And actually, we have a cowboy comedian, pretty famous guy, that is going to be entertainment that night. So it'll be pretty fun. He has about 400,000 people on Facebook. Wow. His name is Chad Prather.
Chad Prather. Mm-hmm. Have to Google him.
I'm telling you, he's the real deal. He's been to the Note Recovery Center a couple of times.
Really?
Yeah. You know Finolio, he can come up with them.
Finolio.
Yeah. All right, you guys have a good day. Glad they got to fill in for you. Had fun with you today. Thank you.
All